heard through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Happy Tuesday leading up to Mariners opening day. We're going to have a special guest joining us at 11:30 to help get you guys ready for Seattle's game against the San Francisco Giants. Before we get to any of that, this hour of Jake and Stacy, brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacy Ross. Curtis Rogers on the board. Guys, KJ Wright, we haven't been talking about him a lot. We've been talking about Chris Carson. He got re-signed. Of course, the trade that the Seahawks made for Gabe Jackson. Talking about Russell Wilson all the time. Not really talking about KJ Wright. People not paying enough attention to him. But KJ Wright could be moving on. So this is stemming from one report.
Hard to hear.
There's one report. It is from a Sports Illustrated Cowboys column. This guy, Mike Fisher, is a reporter for them. And so there's two separate things. First, he had an interview with KJ Wright that was published last week over the weekend on Saturday. And KJ Wright said that the Cowboys would be on his list of dream teams that he would sign with in free agency. Like if he had to move on, the Cowboys would be one of those teams. And Mike Fisher hypothesizes, well, I mean, maybe KJ would like to reunite with Dan Quinn, who's now the defensive coordinator for the Cowboys and, as all of you guys know, was defensive coordinator here in Seattle a while back from that Pete Carroll coaching tree.
Makes sense.
Makes sense. Of course it does. So then a separate column comes out where Mike Fisher says, you know what? In addition, some talks are happening. Some talks are going on between KJ Wright and the Dallas Cowboys. He says they haven't agreed on a number. They haven't even agreed on a number of years for the deal. KJ Wright looking for a 2-year deal. The Cowboys could be looking for a 1-year deal. But they're talking. So my question is, not necessarily does KJ Wright move on? Because that's kind of the boring question. The more interesting question, what does the defense look like if and when KJ Wright moves on?
Look, KJ Wright's somebody that we all take for granted. We really do. And over the course of his career here in Seattle, he has been one of the true great Seahawks through this entire run here with Pete Carroll and John Schneider, right? One of the last three to stand. He's the longest member. He's the longest tenured Seahawk of the Pete Carroll and John Schneider era. And it's not for any random reason. It's because he's a great locker room guy. He's a great leader. And he's a great football player on the field. He's been extremely consistent throughout his entire time here. Now, the part that's unique in this is that KJ Wright has changed the position. KJ Wright is not a Will linebacker anymore. KJ Wright is a Sam linebacker and more of a situational player now in his career, in his 30s, than he is an every down linebacker. You just drafted Jordan Brooks behind him a season ago. And people thought that, oh, it's going to be Bobby Wagner's potential replacement. Well, what if it was KJ Wright's replacement? And that's what it looks like as of right now. And I believe there's still room on this roster for KJ Wright, and I would love for him to come back. But we have to remember that in this process and with this article, I view this very much as an article of self-marketing. This is a self-marketing strategy that you can do. Hey, I've been talks with a certain team. I'm in talks with the Dallas Cowboys right now. There's a real chance that KJ Wright could be going to the Dallas Cowboys. Hey, Seahawks, I'm a desired commodity. Come on, make me a real offer. Let's get this thing going. Let's get this wrapped up. And I'm not saying that it's not real or it's not true or that it couldn't go further down that road. But what I see this as is a self-starter conversation in a market that has been really, really rough to guys that are over 30. And you see, for example, Carlos Dunlap. He had a very strong 2020, Stacy, at a premier position and got his value cut in half in this COVID aftermath offseason. And here in cut number one, you got Jeremy Fowler talking about how linebacker market isn't too hot right now.
The linebacker market is not great. There's not a lot of money being thrown around. He's a really good player, but with his age, I suspect there's a decent chance he's back in Seattle.
So the conversations have been positive up until this point about KJ Wright returning. Go to cut number two, and Brady Henderson says even further, like, hey, KJ Wright's got a great chance to return, but it's not going to be on his terms. It's going to be on the Seahawks' terms.
Yeah, that was the report from my colleague Jeremy Fowler, and yeah, I could see that happening. If it does happen, I would be almost certain that that would be much more on the Seahawks' terms than on KJ Wright's terms. You heard him came out and you said, you know, after that strong season that he had, that he feels like he deserves a raise. He didn't use that term. He said he feels like he deserves a market value deal. But reading between the lines, he was saying that he wants a raise. And I just don't think the Seahawks are in position to give him, $10 million a year just based on the fact that they drafted his replacement last year.
So with all that being said, Stacey, that has nothing to do with his value or how important and how impactful he can be for this team. Has everything to do with the market and the age and what he's going through this offseason. But if he was to leave the Seahawks, I think that there is a big void that is there that puts the Seahawks in a tough position that I'm not sure that they're fully willing to go down. That's why I have a hard time seeing him leave, because they know how important he is to that defense.
See, that's the part I want to get to, right? Because KJ Wright is turning 32 July. Sometime this summer, KJ Wright turning 32, it'll be his year 32 season. Eventually, the team will have to move on. Maybe this is KJ Wright's final year. Maybe he's got one more in him. And I don't mean to slight KJ Wright, because he's actually had two of the better seasons of his career since turning 30. In fact, back in 2018, when he was injured, appeared in just five games, people were thinking, okay, well, maybe this is the year that the Seahawks start to move on. It turns out, no. Not only did he come back and he had his best game of the year was in that playoff game against the Dallas Cowboys, that wild card loss. He turns 30 that offseason. He comes back. He's kind of like fighting in the linebacker depth room. And then he has a great year. One of his best years, I think still a career high in tackles with 132 tackles.
Right.
Then he comes back in and they've got a first round pick they use in a linebacker. People are like, well, he's not replacing Bobby Wagner. So what's this mean for KJ Wright? Comes back in, continues to shine, continues to hold down that spot. He's moved to Sam linebacker. And guess what? He excels there. He blitzed 72 times. He gets 6 pressures compared to 2 over the previous 2 seasons combined. 2 sacks, 11 tackles for loss. That 11 tackles for loss he had last year, by the way, it's second only to the 12 he had in his sole Pro Bowl season in 2016 when he was 27 years old. So KJ Wright, his body's aging. You can't stop that. But he still had 2 of his better seasons with Seattle. And that brings me, Jake, to kind of the point. The reason that the question I wanted was, what's the defense look like without him? And not, is he moving on? Is he signing with the Cowboys? That we don't know the answer to that yet. We're going to find out. But either way, the more important and the more interesting question is, what's the defense look like? Because I'm telling you right now, Seahawks fans are not ready for that defense without KJ Wright. I know that you all love Bobby Wagner, and Bobby Wagner's been fantastic for them. One of the only players, in fact, the only player outside of Aaron Donald to be a first-team All-Pro and Pro Bowler in each of the last 5 seasons. 2 players, Aaron Donald, Bobby Wagner. Those are elite players. And you've been fortunate enough to have him as your solid middle linebacker. And I think that's kind of overshadowed some of what KJ Wright has meant to this defense. But make no mistake, Seahawks fans, you haven't seen this defense really, with the exception of part of 2018, without KJ Wright for 10 years. So there will be a regression. And that doesn't have to be permanent. Jordan Brooks looked fantastic. Dave Wyman would talk about how great Jordan Brooks was. I'm going to take the word of a former linebacker over a lot of analysts when it comes to, you know, what he sees from a linebacker. He was really high on Jordan Brooks. Jordan Brooks got a higher Pro Football Focus grade, by the way, than Patrick Queen, who he's been frequently compared to because Queen was taken after him in the draft and was seen as an available option. So There's plenty of room there for improvement, plenty of reason to be excited about that group. But, man, you're going to have to, if you take a regression there, where do you need a step forward on defense? What needs to happen on defense if you don't have KJ Wright?
To me, it comes down to one simple question. Where do you see the direction of this personnel going moving forward? And what I mean by that is, do you want to continue to lean into your base packages, having 3 linebackers on the field to combat the Rams and the 49ers, because with everybody that they talk about the explosiveness of their offenses, well, they're geared in the running game. That's where it's established for the Rams and the 49ers. It's through their running game that you have to try to limit to make them one-dimensional. If they have their running game going, both of those teams, they are very difficult to stop. So you need to be You need to match up with them physically. And last year, they did a much better job of that, and partly because of the revelation of K.J. Wright holding down the edge at that Sam linebacker position, playing more physical than we have seen over, you know, the past couple years for him, really had a resurgence from that aspect. And so do you want to combat those types of offenses with base personnel on first and second down? Or do you believe that you have a dynamic enough secondary group with, because you got to remember, the other question that we get all the time, Quandre Diggs, Jamal Adams, Ugo Amadi, Marquise Blair, how do you get all those guys on the field, right? Marquise Blair comes back and he's healthy from his ACL. Well, how do you get this guy on the field? Is Ugo Amadi now a bench player? Like, that's some pretty good talent that's just sitting on the bench. So if you feel like you want to move in a direction where you want to go more nickel and dime personnel and you have a really unique secondary that you feel like has good, impactful players that can be solid in the running game and can take you to a different level in your pass defense, maybe you say that K.J. Wright is an expendable player at this point, that it is okay for you to move on and not get into a bidding war with K.J. Wright. Or you could look at it and say, look, K.J. Wright, he was vital to our defense last year. He was vital to our success, and he will be vital moving forward. We don't have as much confidence in Cody Barton or whoever else that we can get on the open market to play that Sam linebacker position. We want K.J. Wright back, and we need him back to hold it down in those first and second down situations. That's the biggest question in all of this, Stacey, is what direction does Ken Norton Jr. and Pete Carroll want to go? Because traditionally, they have answered those heavier personnel groupings with base personnel, not with nickel and dime.
I feel like you can kind of see the logic behind how they want to defend the other teams in the NFC West with some of their personnel decisions. Say they go with nickel. So say that the two most important linebackers on the field are Jordan Brooks and Bobby Wagner. Great. Well, Jamal Adams, I mean, he isn't a traditional safety, but one of the strengths he does have is he can tackle an open field. You know what I mean? Like, he could get a running back down. And he's, again, like, you can see some of the decision-making. One of the things we always heard about Blair, and I haven't seen him play a ton. You and Wyman have seen more of him in camp. Obviously, I saw 2 weeks before he was injured, but you always heard that he was great at tackling, potentially a great open field tackler. So you can see kind of the thought process in, like, how do we prepare against these teams? So you've at least got the weapons, you would think, at least got the weapons. But, yeah, I mean, it puts additional pressure on other guys in this defense, for sure. We don't know what's happening with K.J. Wright. What I will say, if the Seahawks want to bring him back, they're going to have to probably make a move in order to do it. Over the cap has them at about $1.2 million over. That's not the end of the world. Like, you can be over the cap right now. You just got to make some moves. They can restructure. They can release, whatever they want to do. If they want K.J. Wright back, or if they feel like it's worth a sacrifice to bring K.J. Wright back, they can bring him back. If not, then they turn to some other guys they brought in. And fittingly enough, we're going to have a conversation later in the show, kind of a State of the Union at 1 p.m. State of the Union specifically with the defense. Where have they taken a step forward? Where should fans be excited? Where do they still need help? Is there a spot specifically on defense that they could address with one of their three draft picks? So that conversation is going to carry over into that. Before we get to any of that, though, it's 11:15, which means it's time for three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Question number one, guys. We're halfway there to the Final Four with Baylor and who else won last night? Baylor and Houston.
Houston,
that's right. Yeah. Both those two teams won last night. So would you rather your alma mater make a Final Four or a college football playoff?
Ooh. This is a good question. I think Final Four is way more fun. College basketball, March Madness.
Yeah.
There is so much more magic to it and to that run that I would take a Final Four all day, every day.
Yeah, I think a Final Four. Also because my alma mater is Washington. I feel like I would love to see, you know, the Huskies get to a college football playoff and compete there. I really want to see that.
I mean, we've already seen
them. I mean, we saw them against Alabama.
I know, but I'd loved that was the semifinal.
But it
still counts.
I mean, it still counts. But I'm just saying, like, I know that they were there, but like, I'm assuming we're talking like winning.
Yes.
Right? We're talking like you're in the championship. You're in the final. I would just like to see, actually, both men and women's hoops step forward. I don't know. I'd love to see that.
Husky basketball,
yeah,
not be in the doldrums anymore.
Yeah, that's what I really want to see. I want to see us beat Arizona, bear down,
bear down,
topple UCLA.
Arizona women's Final Four last night.
I know.
Shout out Ari McDonald, incredible performance last night. Question two.
Number two.
Which of these Mariners is most likely to have a bounce back season in 2021? We got three options here. James Paxton, Mitch Haniger, or Tom Murphy?
I'm going to go, it's not on a limb, but it's risky because of the injuries. And I've eliminated two. Tom Murphy hasn't been an injury-ridden player, so it's not him. So it's either Paxton or Haniger. I'm going to go with Mitch Haniger. I've got a feeling that Mitch Haniger is going to come back. He's going to be healthy. And he's going to be tearing the cover off the ball. He's going to be showing everybody why he was a all-star at one point in time in his career and return to that form. Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais both have said that Mitch Haniger is their best pure hitter in this lineup and on this team right now. And if he can return to that form, I'm going to be very excited about what this team can be, how they'll start off the season. And ultimately then ask that question of, okay, is Mitch Haniger going to be here for, you know, the long term, or is he going to be a nice little trade piece at the trade deadline? But I think that you see a major resurgence of Mitch Haniger this season.
I'm going to go with James Paxton because, Curtis, you know this a bit better than I do. Correct me if I'm wrong. In two separate outings, didn't he strike out eight and strike out nine?
Yeah, he struck out 17 guys in just eight innings of work.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I am all on board with this being James Paxton's bounce back year, finally getting healthy. The interesting thing about both of these guys, though, is you wonder whether or not they have bounce back seasons and then get traded.
Well, it's all three guys.
All three guys. Oh, yeah. Because
you've got Cal Raleigh waiting in the wings at catcher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you got Torres.
Well, that's what one
that's what some
ex-Mariners president would call him. Yeah. Luis Torrens.
Yes, that's right. Torrens.
I'm going to win.
I've now decided
this is a competition.
All right.
And Mitch Haniger is going to be the one that has the biggest bounce back. Not
loser has to eat an entire bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch with shrimp tails in
it. No.
Yes.
Oh. Stacey, no.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes.
No, why would you do that?
Yes.
No.
Let's go, James Paxton.
No.
You know Number I'm watching three. Friday.
I am not agreeing to that.
Yep.
It's all bad.
It's all happening. Bad. What's question three?
Well, when Stacey loses, she's going to change the
rules. Yeah, exactly.
No,
what I'm
not.
Say.
I love shrimp. I love Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I would do that. You don't have to eat the shrimp tails. You just have to eat around them.
No,
it'll be fine.
No.
They're going to be fresh shrimp tails.
Stacey.
Okay.
Question three. CBS Sports' Dennis Dodd reports the Pac-12 is getting closer to naming a commissioner, and he's hearing three names.
I like that.
Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith, Clemson AD Dan Radakovich, and former XFL commissioner Oliver Luck. Of those three, which one do you think would be the strongest choice?
Look, Gene Smith is one that intrigues me. He's got former Pac-12 experience, was the athletic director at Arizona State. He's climbed the ranks at Ohio State and is very, very well respected and well regarded across the country. He makes sense to me. Dan Radakovich is a guy that I would be very leery of because what he has done and what his resume is padded with is his success at Clemson. Well, it's pretty easy as an athletic director to turn revenue and profits and to add, you know, to your athletic facilities when your football program is as dominant as Clemson has been under Dabo Swinney. So is it Radakovich? Is he the one that's responsible for that football program turning around, or is it Dabo Swinney? That would be my biggest question, because that to me determines whether I think he could be the guy for the Pac-12 commissioner position, do an actual good job. The one that makes the most sense to me and is the strongest choice, I'm a big fan of Oliver Luck. It's not the name, it is everything that he has done in his career, how widely regarded. He is respected, and I think that he has the type of personality and understanding of the Pac-12 and just the country in general, how to make this successful. And I really liked how he did everything with the XFL. It wasn't his fault that COVID hit. So I'm a big fan of Oliver Luck.
Curtis, what do you think? I'm bouncing back and forth between all three. I think Oliver Luck's appeal to me is primarily by name and network.
Well, I think he's got the broadest resume.
Yes.
Where he has been an athletic director before, yep, at West Virginia. He's also ran an entire league in the XFL. And the XFL's demise was not Oliver Luck's fault.
And maybe what I want for the Pac-12 is a big name to be attached.
Well,
as
and you've got
the new commissioner.
You've got a big TV contract coming up. You want somebody in there that's going to be able to negotiate with these networks and to get the best deal for the conference. Gene Smith and Dan Radakovich have accomplished a ton in their respective athletic departments, but neither one of them has ever had to negotiate a big TV deal. Oliver Luck has been in that role before. I think Luck, just from familiarity and just having met him a couple of times, I would lean towards him, but I think Gene Smith would probably be my pick number two.
I was going to say, what's the biggest reason you might not then want Dan? Is it Radakovich?
Yeah. I think just because how much of Clemson's success is due to him and how much of it is due to Dabo Swinney in that football program, yeah, as Jake pointed out.
Okay, that's fair. Top response on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line is Gene Smith.
Gene Smith, really? Okay, that's interesting. I know Curtis is a big fan of him.
Yeah, so we were researching Gene Smith before the show today, and when he was athletic director at ASU, after a loss to Arizona in the Territorial Cup, Gene Smith told his boosters, quote, to get over it.
Oh.
He told his own boosters at ASU to get over
that
it.
That is the dude that I do not want. I want a Pac-12 commissioner that wants to win.
I mean, as a Wildcat, I love hearing that. I hope Paul Moyer heard that.
God.
Bear down.
All right. Listen, guys, normally we have Mike Salk on with us at 11:30, but today we have a special guest to help us get ready for the Mariners season opener.
Yeah, we do.
That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, it is Mariners insider Shannon Dreyer. She's brought to you by JAFCO Plumbing and Sewer. Shannon, oh my God, I don't even know where to start. Opening day this Thursday, Jake, Curtis, and I are all so excited. We're going to be there at T-Mobile. We're going to have another chance to you on that day to talk to you about the game. So I'm going to go ahead and first just, my biggest question is going to be about Kyle Lewis. That's the first thing that comes to mind. So how is he on his progress, road to recovery? Do you expect to see him in the opener? Are we thinking there could be an IL stint?
I'm going to be honest with you, Stacey. I have absolutely no idea. All we know is what we knew when they left Arizona, and we haven't had any updates since. He obviously wasn't in the game yesterday. They said he wouldn't play yesterday. From my knowledge on deep bone bruises, they can linger. They can take a long time to heal, but I've also seen some guys come back from them fairly quickly. So they've said it's going to be pretty much a roster time decision when they have to finalize that roster. And then maybe it won't even be that, because I do think that there's a possibility with the roster that they do have and the flexibility that they do have. If they think he needs just a couple more days, they conceivably could play a little short for a couple of days, because if you do put him on the IL now, you will not have him for any of the homestand. He would be activated when they go on the road. So they've got a lot of decisions to make, and we just really do not know very much at all at this point.
Now, Shannon, with that limited knowledge, it's hard to exactly come to a determination of, okay, how are they going to, what moves are they going to make next, essentially, right? And so now, what can you see if this is a more prolonged situation? What could you see them do in response to the absence of Kyle Lewis for an extended time?
Well, they've got all sorts of options. Jake Fraley actually started to, in the second half of spring training of the Cactus League games, was hitting quite well. He had an absolute disastrous start to spring training, was striking out, it felt like every other at bat. and really turn things around. So, I mean, that will always be an option. But, you know, that was an option all winter long. And still Jerry DePoto was saying that he was looking for a left-handed hitting outfielder. Well, he had one. So that's obviously, I think, not their number one choice if it is a long-term situation. We haven't heard of anybody signed right now, and that probably has a lot to do with they're probably up in the air with where Kyle Lewis is right now. They could go out. They could sign somebody. You know, players right now are opting out or they're being cut from rosters. But, you know, still, is that an ideal situation? I think if it was something to be very long term, and there are no indications that it is at this point, they are still saying that they are holding out hope that he can be ready to go for opening day. So that doesn't sound like that's what we're heading toward. But, you know, if it was going to be a long-term situation, then I think you're probably looking for a stopgap. And I think the next person that you would see in that spot would be Jared Kelnick.
Shannon, one of the guys I'm really interested to see is Evan White, particularly with his development at the plate. Do you feel like you saw what you needed to from him in Cactus League play so far? I know it's early. I know it's spring. But do you feel like there's some development there?
Yeah, it's really interesting because you look at what he did last year, and at the plate, it was a disaster. What he did with the glove was absolutely fantastic, and he'll be the first one to tell you that everything physically, he didn't like his swing last year, mentally, he didn't like the way that he was dealing with the struggle. And then just on the development side, all of the first of being in the big leagues for the first time. And he went through something that a lot of hitters go through when they do get up to the big leagues. And there is so much information that is available to you, everything from reports to extra coaches. And you have to learn how to edit all of that pretty quickly. And all of that, I think, kind of contributed to what we saw last year from Evan White. And he said, just, you know, even walking into a hitting meeting now and being comfortable enough that I am not just the brand new young rookie up from AA, and being able to tell guys, this is what I like to do, this is what I don't like to do. Those were things that were not easy for him last year and sometimes didn't get done. So the comfort level and where he is at right now, I think will be a factor. And then, you know, he had an interesting offseason. He did make some small changes with the swing. It looked like he abandoned them. It was a hand placement adjustment that he had made. It looked like he abandoned him midway through the Cactus League games, and then you started to see the bat take off. And really interesting, the batting average wasn't there, but the production was. I believe he was third in all of baseball last during the spring in runs driven in, and that's kind of his role. So I think that his eyes were open to what he was able to find out about himself and how he reacted to the situation last year. I like how he's internalized that. I like the plan that he has. He's been very steadfast in what he wants to do. So now it's a question of how it all translates into the season. But I think one of the things that I do look at with Evan that I do like is he's had that adjustment period at every level when he has moved up. And hopefully we saw him get that out of the way last year, and he is able to take steps forward with the bat, because there's a lot of power there. This guy can do a lot of damage.
Now, Shannon, one of the biggest surprises, probably the biggest surprise of spring training, and a very fun story, is Taylor Trammell. And how he did this spring and how he earned, and repeat, earned that job in left field. It was really fun to watch all spring. What is your thoughts and expectations for him, you know, coming out and making his major league debut?
Well, first of all, it's a wonderful story, and it was something that I thought there was a possibility that it could happen heading into the spring, just because of who he was and where he was and his history in looking at the numbers and knowing that there was a swing change. And this was a guy, you know, he's a former first rounder. He was on a path, you know, he was a highly rated prospect, and he was on a path to do some good things. And then you looked at his numbers, and all of a sudden they fell off a cliff in AA. He found out that, you know, there were some swing changes. He was traded twice, so his prospect shine just kind of goes away after that. But what you get with that is that if he is making adjustments with everything that he had behind him, and he had a very successful, everything through A-ball was very, very successful. The numbers were great. And the fact that he had the years that he had in the minor leagues, I had the feeling that if he did get it going, if he kind of found what he was looking for, he could move really quickly at that point. It wasn't a situation where he's going to have to go back and do AA for a year. We're going to need to see him for a while at AAA. I think that he had done enough that he could put it all together, and that's what we saw. Now he has to take it to the big league level.
I was
and
just
there are things, you know, the strikeouts, I think, there are good strikeouts and there are bad strikeouts, and he is going to be a guy that's going to strike out. He does have a good eye, but they are, you know, they are looking for the kind of that untapped power for him. So that is going to be a part of it. And it will be an adjustment, as it is for most young players. And I think that they have to kind of give him room to make those adjustments as he makes this next transition to this level.
You answered that question right before I asked it. Perfect. I was just going to say, what's he going to excel at? What kind of player are we going to see? And then where is he going to need to take a step forward? So I want to fit in one last question here. Marco Gonzalez is going to be on the mound to opening day. I know that, you know, with a lot of the young guys we've been talking about, some of the people that we've been familiar with, like Marco, have not been swept under the rug, but just haven't drawn quite as much attention. How's he been looking in spring? And have you seen him? Is he adding anything else? I mean, what's his stuff been looking like?
He's looked like Marco, and that's a good thing. And I've actually got a piece coming out on 710sports.com. It should be any minute right now on Marco. And it was funny. I was talking to Tom Murphy about him, and he said that, you know, Marco discovering who he is as a pitcher and as a person and understanding that is as dangerous as anything else. And the thing that really gets me about Marco is he is to the point right now where we've seen him make different adjustments in different years. We've seen him add pitches in different years, but now it's just a matter of fine tuning. And, he knows how to game plan. Nobody game plans better than Marco Gonzalez. Nobody sticks to that plan better than Marco Gonzalez. So spring training for him, especially this year, he was really in that veteran, just getting ready for the season type mode. But the thing about Marco that has really stood out this spring is the leadership side that he has taken, and he definitely took that on last year, and I think he's always wanted to take that on. That's just his personality. He was the guy, you know, four state champions and Friday night guy at Gonzaga. He was the guy. It doesn't matter that he doesn't throw 95, doesn't matter that he barely throws 89. You know, his mentality out there and how he takes that and how he carries himself really puts him head and shoulders above others in that department. And this is something that he's really taking on. And I just got a real good chuckle because he was talking about how much he loves this group. And he said something that a lot of people have said, and it's interesting because I hadn't heard it before, which makes you go, oh, so this wasn't happening before. But Kelnick pointed out, and a couple of others pointed out, but Marco said everybody works. Everybody. You look around and there's nobody that you have to worry about. They're all on that same page, which I found interesting. And then he also said, and we all have a little bit of a chip on our shoulder. And I'm like, gee, where does that come from, Marco? So I think that he has put that imprint on the team. And my favorite line from him is, I'm not a big fan of anybody telling me when it's time to win. So, you know, that is Marco right now. I think he will take care of business out on the field. It'll be very interesting to see how he handles everything else.
Love hearing that. She is Mariners insider Shannon Dreher. As a reminder, like Shannon said, she's got a piece coming out on Marco Gonzalez, who will be your opening day starter. That'll be up later today on 710sports.com. Keep your eyes peeled for that. As always, Shannon, we love hearing from you. We'll talk to you Thursday with the first episode of the Scott Service Show. It'll usually be on Tuesdays, but we got a special opening day Thursday show, so we can't wait to talk to you then.
Looking forward to it, guys.
See ya.
See you, Shannon.
All right, let's go ahead and continue this conversation. Before I do that, I do have to tell you guys we have some breaking NFL news about the 17-game schedule. So when we come back, I'll fill you in on that. Plus, the Mariners are not expected to make the playoffs, but they can start their push for the postseason. What's that even mean? And how can fans measure a successful year for the Mariners without actually seeing a ton of wins? That's all coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
All right, so a bit of NFL news before we jump back into some Mariners talk. I'm going to go ahead and read from Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. He has this. A 17-game NFL schedule is made official today. The Seahawks will go to the Steelers for their extra game. He said all NFC teams will play a road game against an AFC team this year. That flips in 2022. So the good news for that, if you're a Seahawks fan listening, all of you are, is that it's not like the Rams get their 17th game as a home game and you don't. It's going to be by conference, flips every year, and the ongoing rule for who you're going to play in the 17th game will be opposite conference and then opposite of the division you're already playing. For instance, last year, the Seahawks played the AFC East, and so the 17th opponent would be from the AFC and not the AFC East. So it would be like Kansas City or something like that, someone from the AFC West, for instance. And then next year, you're going to get that 17th game at home. So hope that all makes sense. If you have additional questions, 710-710, the text line's right there. I'll try to answer those as we go along. But that 17th game was expected to be approved, now officially approved. So this year, Seahawks going to play the Pittsburgh Steelers, a team that was not previously on the schedule.
No, and that's going to be a really tough Week 17 game. I mean, you look at the schedule for the Seahawks, it's going to be a tough one. It's going to be one of the hardest schedules in the NFL this year. So an incredible challenge for this group to not only bring back the band together again, but to try and make subtle improvements at the, as they've tried to do along the way to make them better and to improve their roster so that they can compete with some of the better teams in the NFL. And when you win your division, you then it turns around on you the following year where you have a very difficult schedule. It's just the way that the NFL is set up and the way that they try to create parity is they match you up with all the other division winners from around the NFL.
All right, so that is the NFL news, and we're going to go ahead and get ESPN's Brady Henderson on with us in a little under an hour. He's going to join us at 12:45. He's going to help us understand a bit more about the 17-game schedule, what it means for players, if there's going to be any, you know, negative outcry from this or any discussion about it. He's also going to tell us everything we need to know about KJ Wright. He has been rumored to be talking to the Cowboys. So, again, we'll jump into that at 12:45. First, though, let's get back to the conversation we were having with Shannon Dreher. She joined us about 20 minutes ago to talk about some of the development she's seen from guys like Evan White, guys like Justice Sheffield, guys like Ty France. Also gave us an update on Kyle Lewis in that there's no way to know yet. She has no idea if he's going to be there on the opening on the field on opening day. It's still very unclear about his status. So let's talk a bit about how you measure success for the Mariners. I don't know that a ton of Mariners fans are honestly expecting their team, your team, to push for a playoff spot or be in the playoffs, but the expectation is they're better than last year. So what's that mean, right? What does it mean to be better? Where are you looking for a particular guy? Is it from the rotation? Is it from the lineup? Is it from the bullpen? What are you looking at here? Jake, when you think of success, what's one of the first places you're looking at?
Well, one of the first places that we're looking at here is going to be, obviously, with the guys that you have brought up, with the guys that you talk about a developmental program, and now you have some of the guys that Jerry DePoto has picked over the years and has brought up. You see Kyle Lewis, Evan White, Justice Sheffield. I think that those three names stand out very, very clearly as you need to see development from those guys. You need to see them continue to take the next step because these are guys that also that Jerry DePoto has his fingerprints on in terms of the process of how they're going up and how they're going to make this team better. Another thing that you need to look at is finding a home for Ty France, right? You need to evaluate and know that at the end of the year, what role Ty France is going to have on this roster. Is he a third baseman? Is he a second baseman? Is he a guy that's going to be purely a DH type of hitter? You need to know the answer to that question because that's going to determine what you think of, you know, how you're going to approach, you know, Seager and where he's going to be at. Do you let him go or do you bring him back and want to bring him back? I think that Ty France finding a home for him is going to be another thing as a developmental piece that you look at and have to determine.
All right. We are taking you around the diamond thanks to the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. We're just 2 days away from opening day. 710 will be broadcasting live from T-Mobile Park starting at 11 a.m. with us on Thursday. I'm so excited. And that's Around the Diamond brought to you by the Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. I have a fun game that I'm going to introduce. You and Curtis are going to play. It's going to be about whether or not you're going to buy a steak in a bet that I'm going to make about the Seahawks.
Okay. Stacey with her bets again.
Look, guys, I don't have a problem.
Gamblers Anonymous.
This day, yeah. Today, oh, it's you guys that are going to be betting and, of course, the listeners. You guys can also play. Text in 710-710. That's coming up next.